Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Hikamo podcast, hosted by myself, William, and co-host Hannah. The Hikamo podcast is all about helping you discover career options by sharing career insights from people working across a range of industries. Today, we are joined by a makeup artist who is going to be sharing insights into how she became an established name in the fashion and beauty industry. She works with celebrities and major fashion brands, contributes to various editorials, and is a regular name at London Fashion Week. On top of being an award-winning makeup artist, she is a teacher, beauty editor, and a published author. Please join us in welcoming Lan Nguyen Grealis.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi Lan, thanks for coming on Hikamo podcast. Great to have you on the show. We're really looking forward to getting to hear your story and advice on how people can become makeup artists and how you managed to achieve that. So what we normally like to do is we start with a game of two truths and a lie, and then we'll jump into the questions. I'll hand over to you in terms of two truths and a lie, please.
Fantastic. So I've always wanted to be a dancer, and I've made my money in baking cakes. I am a fantastic cook.
Okay, cool. Well, those are three.
I'm just noting them down. Yeah. So dancer, always want to be a dancer, money in baking cakes, and fantastic cook. But I'm not sure about number two, because you're a makeup artist, so you make your money baking cakes.
I mean, it was the delivery. I think that one's the lie.
Do you?
Yeah.
But then, always want to be a dancer. Yeah, I think I'm going to go for that one. I think so. The lie is money and baking cakes.
No, it's actually I'm a great cook.
Oh, really?
And you know what? I'm a really bad liar, so that's great, because everyone knows me as a really cook. Sorry. I mean, if we think about lockdown, you know, everyone made really fancy foods and stuff, but I actually only managed to master banana pancakes and macaroni cheese.
Okay, fair. Right.
That's cool. What
cakes do you tend to bake?
Well, I used to make money just doing like sponge cakes, you know, cake pops and stuff like that with my sister. So we made a bit of a living off that on a part-time basis. Yeah.
Cool. And then in terms of being a dancer, have you had any experience doing kind of professional dancing or anything like that?
Well, when I was younger, I used to, like when I was about seven, I always wanted to be a dancer, but I was just so stiff. But I still, in my head, you know, when you think you're amazing, I still got involved in all the shows. I used to dance all the local events and around my town. I used to join the clubs. I used to do all the competitions and everything until I sort of realized I wasn't that great. But
What type of dance was you into?
It was a bit of contemporary, freestyle. I always imagined myself sort of in a band or something. I was never a solo person. So when we talk about my career, I've always got the relationship of always fighting between trying to step forward as myself or always involving a team. I just love being around people.
Amazing.
Great. Yeah. I think that kind of really shows your creative side as well. So you've kind of explored dance and then, as we're going to come on to, in terms of fashion, beauty, makeup.
Please tell us a bit about who you are and how you became a makeup artist.
So I was born in Ireland. First off, I think it's quite an important thing to show my upbringing, because I had no opportunities. There was no social media. You know, it was in the 80s. We were very surrounded by pop music and, you know, very colourful things. So I think later on in life, it's really helped me, because I was surrounded by a lot of music and expressing yourself, and people were very open to having big hair, back combing, you know, shell suits and all that sort of stuff. But growing up, you know, I was very artistic, and, you know, your aspirations when you're at school, I grew up in the convent, was pretty much very minimal. You know, I wanted to be an artist, but I was only allowed to really do academic work. So it's only when I moved to London when I was 12, and I was embracing the art side. My teachers were very good, and they pushed me to keep doing the art, that I went into a foundation course, and I experienced photography, fine art, styling, printing, textiles, graphic design. And I thought I was actually going to be somebody in advertising, because I love working to a brief. So I loved working to a brief and creating posters, advertising. But they actually told me I was great at textiles and I should become a fashion designer for men. So that freaked me out, because I was like, I'm a woman and I have no interest in men's clothes. I wouldn't know the first thing about designing men's clothes. But I just went with it, because when you're around an art environment, nobody really understands you as much. You know, you're around people who tell you, you should do this, you should do that, you're great at this, great at that. And you're sort of drawn to so many aspects. So I was really getting involved with doing absolutely everything. The best school for arts and fashion was pretty much Central St. Martin's, which is based in central London. And so I applied for there, and I was very young, I was 19. And when I went there, you know, I was after a student life, you know, again, I wanted to be around people, but it was very competitive. And I felt like, you know, it became almost a job straight away, you know, being a fashion student, you know, you have to, pay for everything. There's a lot of expenses, the materials, everything like that. So I found it quite tough, because I was working like 3 or 4 jobs as well, trying to fund my materials, creating dresses, my sketchbooks, to the materials, you know, arts and paints. You know, it's not very cheap, but I had to do it because I wanted to be the best. And on my third year, what happened was I was on my final day of my coursework, and it literally had to be handed the next day. And my ceiling collapsed and absolutely destroyed everything. And I'm not talking about a bit of work here. I'm talking about 3 months of my life, of all my collections, my sketchbooks, everything that I had done that had to be handed in. And this would have been my year for going off working with a fashion house. So I had wanted to work with Prada or Gucci, depending on my results. And yeah, I couldn't hand it in because everything was absolutely destroyed. It was pitch black. And I think I must have blacked out at the time, because I was, you know, pretty young and I was scared. And it was one of those case scenarios of like, oh, you know, telling the teacher like the dog ate my homework type thing. Yeah. And I thought no one would believe me. So we didn't have digital phones or cameras or things like that at the time. Only had a Polaroid, but a camera, and I managed to take a picture, but it was just black. You know, you couldn't even see it. So I went on holiday and pretty much erased what happened. I came back 2 weeks later. My mom had moved house and moved everything and binned the lot. So there was no recollection of me in the art world or fashion. So, yeah, so I just literally went back into work. I was working in a pub, Sainsbury's retail, and I stumbled on a job that was a bit of PR work. And the guy came up to me and said, you know, you'd be great to work in this PR company. It's a photographic studio. Do you want to make extra cash? And I said, why not? I went, and it was a photographic studio. I was the coffee girl at the time. But within a few weeks, you know, and the manager came up to me and said, you look like somebody who could probably do a bit of makeup, because I was really into my fashion at the time for myself. And I had really bad acne. So I was always wearing a lot of makeup. Like when I'm talking about full face, I'm talking about like, you'd never catch me anywhere. I'd sleep in my makeup. That was how bad I was. So I said, okay. I went in and did my first client. And, you know, from then on, they were super happy, and I haven't stopped since. And that was over 18 years ago. So imagine, never did makeup for anyone before, stepped in, had this opportunity just to do makeup for real people who wanted to have just a makeover. They needed to look, whether it was somebody who wanted to look like a movie star, somebody who wanted to look like a supermodel, somebody who just wanted to look you know, it was just a family portrait or something, or a man wanting to look like a woman. There was people, all different scenarios, all different skin types, and I was working on these people. So I see this as my training, you know, grounds, I suppose, looking back. And I did that for a very long time. And from there, I met a photographer who then noticed that I was doing makeup, and he said, you know, I'm looking for a makeup artist. Do you fancy come join me on a shoot? I said, yes. Went, and it was like a celebrity. I'm really bad at names, so I wouldn't remember who she was, but I remember the face. And he said, I love the way you dealt with her. She's a very difficult person. And, you know, she absolutely loved your makeup. So well done. I thought, great. What are you doing next week? And he said, nothing much. I said, okay, I'd like you to come to Paris. I was like, what for? And he goes, well, I'm dyslexic, but I'd like you to come and help me hold my lights and just help me with my work. Not knowing who he was, by the way, he happened to be a massive, big fashion photographer that traveled around the world, worked for the royal family, you know, with Princess Diana. Like, he was one of the original photographers that worked with Andy Warhol, Kate Moss, to Eva Evangelist, to Kylie Minogue, to absolutely everyone you can think of, he's shot. He's got a pseudonym, so you wouldn't really know of him. But he took me to Paris, and I think this was the pinnacle of where I wanted to be, because when we arrived in Paris, it was at Couture Fashion Week, and the first show that I stepped in was at Dior. So
that is incredible.
The Dior fashion shows, imagine, surrounded by all the supermodels, and, you know, as people like, you know, Naomi Campbell was a big name at the time. You had Eva Herzegova, you had Christy Turlington, Helena Christensen, you had all these women, Giselle, hanging around. You had people like Maria Kyla or Natalia Vadanova, the Russian model, who were just starting, you know, they're still babies, coming into the scene. And I knew nothing about fashion, knew nothing about these sort of celebrities. And I was just in there as like a fly on the wall. And I pretty much just went around backstage helping my photographer. And again, you know, my job turned into just from helping assisting him to then dissecting his images, choosing the top 10 from each show. So we went from Chanel to Louis Vuitton, Dior to anything you could think of. We were there, front row seats with every A-list celeb. And my job was basically to pick out the best images and send them off worldwide to every newspaper, to every magazine in the world within like minutes of the show finishing. Now, for people that don't understand what that means, was digital had just come into play. So for every photographer that would take a picture, they were able to send that image straight away to any newspaper within seconds. So it was big news at the time. So people were just working it out, but they were getting click happy. So for every show, you'd have about 2,000 images, and I had to pick 10. So you can imagine when you're looking at all these supermodels, it's amazing. But I guess my fashion experience and my eye for taste was there, because I was able to spot the right model, the right look, the right outfit. I had that connection and I was able to do it. And we got hits every single morning. We'd wake up, you know, we were front cover, front spread, 10 pages around the world. So it was very lucrative for the photographer, but for me, I guess it was great training, because I got to see everything firsthand before everyone else. And it was when I came back from these shows that my friends from the studios would say, oh, you know, we can see that you're creating stuff that no one else is doing, so you should really maybe look into becoming a professional makeup artist. I was like, maybe I should go train as a makeup artist then. They're like, no, you've actually got something, so you should just carry on. And that's what I did. And, you know, I had no mentors or anything apart from my friends telling me what to do, but that's how I've just survived. I've just gone from following opportunities, word of mouth, and testing, and just doing all those things, and I'm here now.
That is so fascinating, because you think, had that not have happened to you in your fashion, when you was at the end of sort of your fashion degree and course, that you wouldn't have been in the position that you are in today, which is just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's Sorry. Yeah, so that's exactly what I feel like it was meant to be. Like, I absolutely love my job. Like, every single day is, I just don't feel like I'm working. I just wish there was more of me, which is why I probably always recruit people.
And I think also from that, it's around seizing opportunities. So an opportunity presented itself to go with the photographer, you took the opportunity, or even before then, actually, the opportunity to do makeup and mm-hmm. and being kind of bold enough to seize that opportunity, I think is really important. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
No, you're welcome. I mean, yeah, 100%. My whole career is all based on opportunity, word of mouth, and being a nice person, being open. You know, it doesn't come easy. Like, it's scary. Mm. But I've always, like, with my books and things, you know, I research everything before I take that step. You know, I'll always say yes, and then I'll run away and I would just work my ass off 24 hours round the clock to ensure that I know what I'm actually going to step into, you know. But I always have that freedom because you just don't know what's around the corner. So I always keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you think it helped the fact that because you didn't have kind of the training when you were reviewing images and having to select, say, 10 out of thousands, the fact that you had like a fresh kind of approach, fresh perspective to everyone else that was in the industry because they had maybe had the same training, do you think that really helped?
Yeah, I think so. I think it helped with me standing out from the crowd, you know. And I've been in positions where, you know, where I've sort of know what I'm doing and then I get a bit stale. So I think when you come into something, you have no fear, and I think as an artist, when you have fear, it really stumps you because you don't push yourself. And I found that I got very nervous when I started to hold myself back. So I wish I always had that childlike presence in my brain and not worry about what people think. Because at the time, because I had no ambition to do anything particular, if somebody said, no, you can't do that, which I got a lot, by the way, right after 12 years, even now, people will be like, no, that's not going to work. And then I'm like, before I'd be like, I don't care, I'm just going to do it anyway, you know. But now it's like, oh, I wonder why they said it doesn't work. Maybe I'll have to go and do my research. So I take a lot longer to actually take that step. But when I was a lot younger, I just stepped right in it. And I think it's really important for people that want to try new things, just do it, because you just don't know what you bring to the table with a fresh outlook. And it really 100%. Does help. Mm.
Yeah, you have to overlook all of that doubt and just go for it sometimes. Amazing. So you touched on it a bit before, but what would you say your job involves, and how would you describe a typical day or a typical project as a makeup artist?
Okay, so makeup artist, you know, has many categories. You know, there's film, there's TV, there's show work, there's musicals, there's design, there's campaigns, there's branding. So there's so many windows. For me, I guess it's always you do the research, you get a brief from a client, whoever it is, whether it's a celebrity or a music video or a TV show. You have some sort of brief that you have to go away, come back with ideas, and then pitch. And it's a very collaborative job. So you have to be very good at vocalizing and being able to show people what you're going to do. Because remember, loads of people don't really know what you're talking about. You know, it's such a visual job that you have to be able to learn the language and at the same time be able to deliver lots of mood boards and things like this that can convey an idea. So once you've agreed on an idea, then, I mean, for me, I would go and test the looks if I haven't done it before, if it's really creative. I test the products I've got, and I'll keep doing it until I'm 100% confident. And then, you know, I pack my kit. I'll always go through my whole kit the night before. I'll go through everything. And then in my head, I'll go through the stages of, you know, the problems and scenarios that I might come across from the model. You know, I always try and find out who the model or the talent is so I can get a step ahead and look at what they usually do. And then I always try and move away from what they usually do and add a bit of something new to the table if I can. But then once I've got that done, you just turn up and you have to be prepared to work really quick. So by doing all the prep and research beforehand cuts out a lot of time when I start my makeup on set, because often enough, you know, depending on who it is, sometimes, you know, they're always complaining that maybe makeup artists take too long, but actually I'm quite quick, and this is because I do all my prep. So people automatically get surprised when I start working because I sort of already know what I'm going to do.
And you work well under pressure as well. You must be able to.
Yeah. Now, from doing works on shows, I love working on fashion shows because sometimes you only have minutes to create a whole look, you know, so it really does help your skill set to be able to get as much practical. And, you know, I'll never think, oh, I've got ages to do a look. I'll always work really quickly because for me, it's always been an asset for all my jobs. I think I get booked because of it as well. So, you know, there is no room for faults when you're working on shows. You know, people can see everything because there's no retouching backstage, which is why I love it, because that pressure of no retouching is also a skill set because you're not relying on anybody else and you're really pushing yourself to the max to make sure it's absolutely flawless.
Yeah, in terms of during a show, so something like London Fashion Week, within one show, how many different people's makeup would you have to do?
Ooh, so, you know, you can have an exhibition of 4 models, right up to 60 to 100 models.
Wow.
I've managed shows where I think I had 5 shows back to back running at the same time. So I was running around with about 84 makeup artists. And a whole core team of 12 who I designed the look and then I did the demo on each show and then my assistants would then carry out and manage the show with all the rest. And then I literally ran from show to show just doing final checks on the lineup. So I'd literally scan the whole room and I could spot if someone doesn't look right, if someone needs a particular color, someone needs powdering, you know, I would run around and do all that. So time-wise, you know, 20 minutes is generally my sort of max. So I can also fit 4 to 6 people in an hour if I really push myself. But as I'm getting older, I'm a bit slow.
Being a bit modest, maybe. I think that's really useful insight in terms of the scale of what's happening behind the scenes at something like London Fashion Week or any show, in terms of I've seen on TV and stuff kind of the mayhem that happens behind the scenes sometimes, but to hear it and understand the scale of kind of, you know, you're having to do all that prep in terms of look, but actually you're having to run around and make sure that your team are hitting what you're aiming to achieve,
the looks. Just have to remember as well, at the same time you're working alongside hair people, nail people, exactly on the same. So you could have 5 to 8 people working on one person exactly at the same time. So you imagine I'm trying to do an eyeliner and I've got the head pulling from side to side, the hair dryer blowing, and at the same time you've got photographers snapping for the best shot. And if you're working with a top supermodel or somebody, they are surrounded. Like, I mean, with the pandemic now it doesn't happen anymore, thank goodness, but back then we had, I mean, you're in it, you could be in a small tiny room with about 60 people, you know, and it was horrendous. But, you know, you as a makeup, you just focus. I never knew what was going on. You know, I could see what was going on, but I just focused in the job in hand to get it done. And then you've got journalists asking you questions, and then you've got people quizzing you about how to create the look at the same time as you're trying to manage all this. So, you know, nobody really sees it unless you're backstage. But even then, you know, it was so tough. But I absolutely loved it. I loved the challenge. But again, I relied on my team. And again, with doing the work prehand, the testing, the looks and everything, it was all part of it, of getting it slick, you know, for those 2 minutes or something for the show. You know, we'd be prepping for months. And then,
yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, especially in terms of you making an initial look and then having to make sure that you hire the right people, your team to be on point in terms of being able to recreate that look for many different models. I mean, that's also quite a lengthy process, I suppose, to recruit people on your team. So how do you go about doing that?
So I recruit my team. What I tend to do is hold masterclasses, or, you know, sometimes it's word of mouth. And if I've got room, then I'll start, you know, picking people in. But generally, I get a lot of people asking if they can shadow me or do work experience. And it's just timing. You know, if I need somebody and someone happens to message me and I need them, then I'll say, yeah, okay. And I'll just go for it. I'll give it the chance. Because I never got that opportunity when I first started out, I really do try and give back and let others have the opportunity. And it's been really good because it helps me scale my job. And, you know, even through the pandemic, I was able to send people out to all different jobs, you know, and I keep the business going, not just for me, but for them and the industry. And if I'm teaching them like good work and good skill sets, then they're doing the same with others. So it's a good marketing tool as well, because, you know, when people ask them, you know, who today is this, and they say me, it's an asset. So, you know, it just goes to show, you know, without having to have that training and me doing it back, it's helping others. So, yeah. I feel really
happy. It's useful for both parties. Yeah. Sometimes you do that. Yeah. And in terms of sourcing your clients, especially in the beginning of your career, how did you go about doing that? And even now, do people tend to come to you, or do you look for people as well?
Well, for every, when I first started, I didn't really know where to look. So I started looking, Googling, and well, was Google around that time? There was a couple of online sort of things like Mandy.com or the Stage Coach and stuff like that, you know, newspapers where they had a few openings for makeup artists or do portfolio work with photographers. So at the time I was getting a lot of the jobs through word of mouth from photographers or stylists. But every job that I did, you know, it's always a team thing. So you have at least 5, 6 to 8 people on a shoot at any one time. So imagine if you do really good, those 5, 6, 7, 8 people remember you and they go off. And when they do a job, they recommend me. So, you know, I've always had referrals. So for every single job that I went to, I'd always have a referral. So it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, at the beginning as a freelancer, you know, you have to obviously look for the work because it's not going to land on your lap. I mean, I was very lucky, but also I had to put the hard work in being nice to people, network, offer my services, keep in touch with them and have a personal one-to-one so they could always feel like they could rely on me. But at the same time, financially, I had to go and work on the pub. I had to do PR work. I had to work on the counter. And even when I wasn't making that much money, it was enough for me to go and cover my expenses, to go and buy kit, to go and do work experience or to do free shoots or testings and things like that. And then it got to the point when I started doing the shows and doing the big shows, you know, I was exposed to so many clients and they just remembered me. So, you know, 7 years, 10 years on, I still get calls from people who are maybe just trainees at the time or assistants in production or just runners. And they'd always come up and go, oh, do you know, I remember you years ago, you were doing this show and I remember your makeup was really good. I've got money now, or I work with this client and I just wanted to put you forward if you're, you know, and that's how things happened, you know. So you get to a point where you don't have to look anymore. People are coming to you and you get to choose. So it's been very beneficial in terms of just being able to network and, you know, and socialize as well. But you constantly have to keep reinventing yourself. You have to, you can't just sit there still and wait because, you know, people are constantly moving. So it's very important to keep those relationships open because you don't know where they're going, what they're doing. And it could be anyone from the tea person to the runner, to the driver, you know, to lighting, you know, anybody. It's really important to acknowledge everyone on set because you don't know where they're going to be and what jobs they can give you. And
that's the importance of having a good impression on people, I suppose. And like you said, you're nice to everyone, and I suppose that's the way it should be. Okay, so in terms of your makeup journey, so would you encourage others to go down the route of being a self-taught makeup artist, or is there any specific training that you can undergo to become a qualified makeup artist?
Okay, now I know what I know, I would say yes, go and do training, because it just helps with the doubt in your mind that you need a skill set. It's really important to go and try and focus on one thing at first of what industry you'd like to do, because then it cuts down the time, and try and master that area. And if you don't like it, you'll always know in an instant if you don't like the people, if you don't like the environment, if you don't like the pressures, then move on to the next. You know, I mean, I spent a long time searching for things and experiencing stuff, you know, and I still haven't experienced everything. And it's been 18 years. So when people say, wow, you've been there a long time, I'm like, yeah, but I'm still quite new because I spent 7 years before I actually called myself a makeup artist. You know, that was 7 years of pure training, experiencing things, knowing what I know, knowing what I love, knowing the people that I want to work with, knowing the industry I want to go in. And, you know, the fact that I've got experience in all those areas have been good for me, because now I can turn around and say, well, actually, I only want to concentrate on this area now. And that's not really for me. But it took me a long time to figure that out without having any mentors telling me I was just on the jobs. So I think nowadays, where you've got social media and you've got loads of education systems, loads of courses, definitely go and figure that out first, because you can just cut down years by just seeing if you're good at it, if you like it, if it's something you want to go in, and then you can focus then on getting your clients afterwards.
Yeah, definitely, because the industry is so vast, so it's going to take a while for you to find your niche. But I suppose because you went through so many different routes, I think there was benefit in that as well, because like you said, you had a big exposure to many different people, many different industries, and that came back as opportunities. Yeah, so in terms of you being a makeup artist, what would you say is the most rewarding part of your job?
A happy client, I guess. When I see, I always have these milestones, and the number one check for me is that when whoever I'm working on, whether it's a man, woman, girl, whatever, old, and whatever look, it could be natural, bridal, creative, when they look in that mirror and they turn around and say, wow, this is amazing, you really know your stuff. If they have that wow factor, that's what makes me smile. And when they say, oh God, you know, you made me feel amazing, I feel so confident. You know, I had a client the other day, she's like, God, I feel like a new me, but I don't feel like, I feel put together, you've really helped me. And you know, things like that is what really makes my job worthwhile. Because, you know, it's just, you know, you can think of it as just a job. You know, some people would think makeup is just a bit of slap on the face or so easy to do. But no, when you really know, awful. Oh, I know. Yeah, I mean, I dedicated my book, one of my book show launches, just to the person who actually said that to me. You know, that's just slap in the face. Anyone could do that. You're not really a makeup, you're not really an artist. You're a beautician. And that really angered me. And that's why I spent loads of money and I just put out a major show just to prove a point. But that was just me. And I thought, if one person is saying that, then there's a lot of people saying it. So I need to change that mindset. And that's what I did. So I ended up focusing on like trying to put an art spin into the work. And it's just, you know, I used all those negative aspects and put them into positives, you know, to change those mindsets.
100%. In fact, could you tell us a bit about your book and what was the process like to write it?
So, you know, makeup for me is like a visual thing. And at the time when I was trying to learn, I remember a lot of it was text heavy. And when you love big visual images and there wasn't one put together to teach, I decided that, there's definitely a niche for that. So I researched and researched and there wasn't one available. So I ended up creating it. And, you know, I did it specifically to show different skill sets. So it's all about art and makeup. And that's the first book. And it's about the history of makeup. So where people say, oh, Kim Kardashian created contouring. I'm like, no. You know, contouring is way, way, way back, you know, in the arts, you know, in the painters. If you look at them, you see those paintings, you see how they're the shading and everything. That's all part of it. You know, back in the film days, you know, those major artists that used to do all that. So I sort of created a journey of providing a history element, but with very strong imagery and modern touches. So it's got history, the arts, sculptures, the theatre, TV, fashion, you know, and how it relates to makeup. So when somebody looks at the book, they don't necessarily go, oh, this is makeup. They look at it and go, oh, this is art. But then they'll read about it and they're actually learning about makeup and how it was put together. And so I worked with, you know, my friends that helped me. Then I got support from a brand who believed in what I was doing and we launched it. And, you know, it's gone into every library worldwide and reaches so many people around the world, which I couldn't have asked for something better like this to be able to get that as a reward, you know. So that's my first book. And the second book was all about getting practical. So it was a modern take. You know,
so what was the book? What was the first book called?
The first book was called Art and Makeup.
Okay.
And the second book is called Pro Makeup Design. So it was released literally in 2019, so before lockdown. But that's about people getting practical, you know, for anyone who wants to learn about designing makeup, and it's more focused on getting involved because I've got smudge charts in there, which no other book really has. So it's more of an interactive book and it's more for the young because I wanted to tailor it to, like, you know, 7-year-olds right up to whatever who wanted to doodle or color or paint or just get involved. So it's more modern and simple.
Amazing, amazing. Would you say as well, your book, in a way, it sort of is a portfolio for your work as well? And for aspiring makeup artists, would you advise that they make a portfolio for the looks that they do?
Yes, I guess so. I mean, when I do a look, I always sort of forget about it. You know, once it's out there, it's out there. So the art and makeup, you know, I forget what I've done until I go back and look at it. You know, it's one of these things that it helps you train yourself to move forward, because once you've done it, you know, you're not going to repeat it. So I've put it out there now to the world. I can't exactly keep going and keep repeating it because it gets boring. So once it's out, it's out. So I think it's really important that once you've got your portfolio to keep reevaluating and looking at it and then go the opposite direction. So my work is constantly changing because I'll look at something and go, oh, I've done that now. So I'm going to go and do something completely opposite. So I'm always back and forth. And I think it's really important to do that because then it modernizes your skill set and just helps you keep staying on trend and you know, in the know of everything. And when you're creating your stuff for your portfolio and testing, it really helps you figure out, you know, you make mistakes all the time, but it's those mistakes sometimes can be very beautiful and can give you an inspiration to do something else. So I'm always documenting stuff backstage, and even if I don't use it, bank it away and use it later.
But in terms of your job, what would you say is the most demanding and challenging part of it? And even post-pandemic, is there still, you know, because I know you touched on how behind the scenes on the runways is quite hectic. Post-pandemic, mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's calmed down now?
It was very difficult, I guess, managing it in, you know, in the pandemic, because obviously we lost our jobs overnight, but I was still doing some filming and with celebrities, and it got difficult because we had to wear, you know, the mask, face mask and the shields, so it sort of impairs your vision a bit and you feel a little bit claustrophobic. But I got used to it very quickly, and I also got to direct, so I was able to direct over Zoom and stuff like that and FaceTime, and it turned out, because I was so used to being backstage and directing my artists, actually I found it quite easy to direct the model or the talent to do their own makeup. So we managed to overcome that challenge. Now it's more laid back. It's difficult because there's less jobs and more people because people are not able to travel. But I've turned into more designing and working with brands, which has been really nice. And being able to not run around and do a million things at once is actually quite nice, to actually take things step by step now and have that overview and really choose things that I really want to do rather than just doing it because I just don't want to miss out. So now I'm very thoughtful in terms of what jobs I do and what it does for me rather than just for everybody else. Before, it's very easy to go yes, yes, yes to everyone, but you get worn out. So now it's nice to go, oh, actually, what is it in it for me? So as a business perspective, I'm more clever, I suppose, with my time. So I'm balancing more of my social, my family life and my friends a bit more, and given trying to balance it a bit better.
Yeah, I suppose that's been the benefit of the pandemic, because it's allowed people to just take a break and reflect and think, mm-hmm. what benefits me more than, say, the other party.
Yeah.
So in terms of you being a makeup artist, what would you say are the key skills that are required?
Right, the key skills, definitely you have to be self-sufficient, motivated. You have to have thick skin, because you're going to always get knockbacks. 90% of it is like, no, we've got somebody else, thank you very much. But, you know, there's one gem in there generally, and then that will lead you to the other things. So you really do have to have self-confidence in that way. The other thing is to be really, just from feedback when I hear from clients, is that you really have to invest in your kit, your tools. You know, as a makeup artist, you've got to be, yeah, you can be clean. There's certain things about clean, but, you know, you've got to be organized and really proactive. I think if you're tidy and proactive and you have things in place, you can't really go wrong. often, you know, on a personal level, when I've seen other makeup artists work sometimes, you know, they've got everything chucked in and stuff. But they're rummaging around. So you spend a lot of time rummaging around looking for things. So I think it's really important that, you know, take that time out to really dissect your kit, organize it so it's professional, easy to look at and easy to get to. So when you're on set, you're literally do and go. Like when you open your bag, put your stuff out, and you're able to reach for anything as quick as possible. I think timing at work is very important. You know, it's not about, yay, I'm here to have a good time, I'm a makeup artist, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, I'm a makeup artist, I'm going to do my job, and then I can spend a little bit of time later, get to know people. You know, it's really important to just focus on the job in hand and get it done as quick as possible. And at the same time, you know, being aware of other people's feelings, you know, it's really important to understand what's happening around you. No, not just like do your makeup and then just sit there and just watch. It's really important to see if someone needs a drink. Go a bit above beyond. I think it's really important to see what else can you add to the team is really important.
Yes, because you're offering a service at the end of the day, so you want to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah, it's all about efficiency. And yes, you know, and you do, you know, you do have to invest in yourself. And you know, don't be afraid. I think it's really important not to be afraid. Yeah. And if you don't know what how to do something, then ask and be honest, you know.
100%. Mm-hmm. And makeup can be very expensive as well. As you said, you worked multiple jobs to be able to fund it, because makeup is not cheap at all. It's an investment at the end of the day.
It's an investment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I get lots of gifting, you know, and for my reputation and doing stuff, you know, I get sent a lot of kit, a lot of free stuff. So when you get to a certain level, that is a perk of the job.
Yeah, that's the aim. That's definitely the aim. You touched on it slightly before, but in terms of your training that you offer and the mentorship that you do, where can people find this training basically? And should they reach out to you via LinkedIn, or how would they go about it?
Generally, people find me on Instagram or Facebook. And I usually put a shout out if I'm doing classes, which I'll do more of, because I'm trying to recruit now, because some of my girls have been with me for over 10 to 15 years and they're all doing their stuff, you know, and they're really good. So always busy. So now I'm on a refresh and building up, because I'm the type of person where I just don't take on assistants and then chuck them out after a week or two. For me, it's years of investment. So at least 3 to 5 years. And if they really love what they do and work with me, then they're there for life. As long as I've got my career, they've got a career too. You can find me on pretty much on Instagram, and I've set up a new makeup salon, which is in the heart of Mayfair. So I'm constantly recruiting.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Something that came out from lockdown, which is really good. A bit scary, but it's now a hub and a home for other makeup artists like myself, people that are freelancers that want to have support or want to work with other makeup artists. I've created this home for anyone to get hold of us.
What was the process like for you to be able to get that space, and how did you go about it?
Okay, so I was approached, you know, by the owner of this building. It's called Urban Retreat, the White House. They used to be in Harrods. So they've got now this White House, which is around the corner from Harrods. And they have this space. And basically, I've been talking to the owner for years and years of collaborating, doing something with events and makeup. But I always said, look, I've always wanted to, if I'm going to have a base, it's got to be something where it's for the mass audience. It's got to be a home for makeup artists and run by makeup artists and session people. We're not salespeople. We're there to actually help really create the image and really help people find their makeup or understand, you know, create that makeover experience. It's like my background when I first started makeovers, but, you know, people have to pay to go and do it and then they have the photographs done, whereas this is more of an express makeover service. So people can come in and meet people like myself and my artists and people that are just working within the industry who've got great knowledge and education that can give that to anybody. And, you know, at the same time, they get to learn stuff by creating looks for people. So when I spoke about this, they were like, yes, definitely, let's try it. And so I've built done the interiors, so to make it work as a makeup artist. We've got kits in there, loads of different brands in there, and basically people are just coming in, booking in to get their makeup done, and we're there to teach them whatever look they want, but giving them one-to-one attention and showing them how to do it. So it's just the next step above from going into a retail store where you're buying makeup and somebody's doing your makeup, but they're selling you whatever it is from the brand, whereas we are the ones that are actually using our skills to help you find a solution to create whatever look you want.
Amazing. That's a really, really useful resource for aspiring makeup artists as well, and for people that want to get their makeup done.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, it's great because, you know, it's for artists that, you know, they can be on a retail counter, but at the same time where they don't have the opportunity to go straight into work on the session world in terms of working on photo shoots or working with celebrities, they might not have access to these sort of clients. I do. And, you know, if they're great, then I can send them off and, you know, and refer them to other clients. But also it's the more of it is about the standard, you know, the high standard. And at the same time, they're going to be able to train, work on the job under me and my team, working with other makeup artists, feel like home and do their own thing. And, you know, we rent out the chairs. So those that do have clients and they build their own client base, they can just come and hire the space and work within the building. So again, it's given the opportunity to makeup artists that don't really have anything. You know, we're always loners. You know, hairstylists have hair salons, makeup artists have the retail counters, or
they're on the go. Yeah,
or they have to go to other people's houses, whereas I'm offering a space for people to utilize it as their own business.
Definitely. In terms of growing your platform, so your Instagram, you have a big following. So how do you have any tips for how you grew your platform and your network?
I think it's really important to start storytelling your work, finding a unique thing. I mean, it depends on what audience you want to have. I mean, my audience are more sort of professional makeup artists because I've always done teaching and tutorials. And this is before Instagram started. You know, I was doing it on Facebook years ago when people didn't really show what was happening backstage. I was doing it because I wanted to protect my IP. You know, I had some cases where people were fobbing my work as their own and it wasn't very nice. And then people stealing stuff. So I thought, well, I'm going to talk about my work, which is why I came forward very early on in stages to showcase my work.
So I think one of the things that I picked up through the answers that you've given is one of the key words is collaboration and the importance of collaboration and building those relationships, because then it allows you, I guess, having a long-term view, like you touched on, where there's people that you met, say, 10 years ago, and they're reaching out to you now, and it's through collaborating with them and the way that you worked with them or interacted with them all those years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really important point, the collaboration. One question that I wanted to ask as well was, so you've worked with a lot of celebrities and big brands. Do you still get nervous when working with celebrities and big brands?
Yes, to a certain point, yeah. I think if I wasn't nervous, then I wouldn't really enjoy what I do. I think it's more of, you know, sometimes you have, you know, you put a name on it, you know, and the big title. So when they've got big names attached to it, you sort of go, oh my God, the pressure is massive, because you look at the type of people that they've worked with. So you sort of always measure yourself, you know, in moving forward with other people. So yeah, when you do have a big name, yeah, I still do get nervous.
Okay, yeah. Great. Cool. And then now then I think what we'll lead into is completing the three sentences. So first one is, success to me means?
Success to me means being happy with what I do.
Okay, great. And then the next one, I wish I had known.
I wish I had known about intellectual property and registering my logo and stuff like that before I went and did it, because it's very costly in the legal terms. Yeah.
Yeah, and would you advise people do that earlier? Because obviously there's a cost associated with it. Do you think is there a certain point when you would advise people to actually look into that? Or are you saying they should do that immediately?
I think if you're somebody that wants to do branding, you really need to protect your name, your logo very early on, and do your research, because yes, it's very legal. It's very costly. I mean, one of the legal sort of things that I battled through cost me my house. So that's how wow. big it is. Yeah. That's okay. another story.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And then the final one, the best advice I could give.
The best advice I could give is go with your instinct all the time. In artistry and makeup or whatever you do, you always have an instinct of whether you like a person, whether the job is right, whether you're doing a good job, or if something doesn't look right, you're generally right. And I think 100%, you just gotta, if in your head you're thinking it, then do it. Listen to your mind. And as artists, we talk to ourselves a lot. So don't talk yourself out of doing something that could be absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much, Lam, for coming on the podcast. It's been fantastic having you share your story and insights into the world of makeup artist art, or being a makeup artist, sorry. So yeah, I'm gonna hand over to Hannah to see us out.
Thank you very much. That was an incredible insight. So thank you everyone for watching and listening to today's episode. Be sure to like, comment and subscribe to the Hikomo channel, and let us know any other career content you would like to see. Until next time, bye bye.